It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History.
Win.
We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello, welcome to the Snooker Scene podcast. I'm Dave Hendon and delighted to be joined this week by one of Scotland's professionals, Scott Donaldson. We'll get it out of the way right from the start, Scott, because I always say this, I know it annoys you. You're not related to Walter Donaldson.
No, I'm not. And every time I watch a game back, I hear you mentioning the exact same fact over and over again. No relation.
I promise never to mention it again. You're from a kind of, well, Britain is a snooker country, but Scotland certainly in the sort of after the emergence of Stephen Hendry in the 90s was very much a snooker country. So how did you find snooker? How did you get into it?
I think just like most players, just watch it on the television. Obviously, there was a lot of coverage in the early 90s. Well, I was born in 94, so it had been about maybe late 90s, early 2000s when I was kind of starting to watch it. And that's when likes of Hendry and Higgins were always on the telly. And to be honest with you, it probably wasn't the players that originally got me into it. I just liked the colour balls and the green cloth. It just looked appealing to my eyes. But when I obviously got to like 10, 11, I seen that there was a lot of the Scottish players dominating the game. And, you know, I used to go in down to some of the Premier League things down in Stirling. I used to watch Stephen practicing in Stirling quite a lot. And just started from there, really. But there's no doubt that the Scottish players sort of, yeah, did influence my decision to play snooker.
So when you started, did you start straight on a full-size table? Because quite a few people sort of start on the six-foot tables.
Yeah, no, I definitely started on one of the smaller ones. You know, the one you can buy. I think my dad bought it for Christmas.
Yeah.
So started small. Then I went to the local club and I thought I was okay. You know, my dad said he thought it was quite good. He said it was better than him when he was younger. So I just kind of continued it from there on. It was just something that you did as a hobby, and then you just kind of get better and better as you get on, and you don't really know how long you're going to be playing. You can take it as far as you can, and you know some people it works for, some people it doesn't.
Did you play other sports, or did snooker become kind of the main one?
Yeah, I didn't play sport at the level I played snooker at. I played a bit of table tennis. I was quite good at that, but I don't think I've ever done anything at it. But no, snooker was the main one for me.
And so you would have played in the Scottish junior tournaments. Again, it's part of the country that already has a structure. So were you able to sort of start playing tournaments quite quickly?
Yeah, as far as I can remember, I used to play in the under-14s and under-16s. I think there was a bit of a fallout with the associations at the time I was growing up, which obviously it wasn't amazing, but it didn't really affect me as a player. It affected me and my parents and whatnot. So, there was a lot of tournaments growing up, and it was good because even though the standard probably wasn't as high as like Sir Win Higgins and all that were coming through when the amateur game was bigger back then, but there was still a lot of really good juniors back then, and a couple of them are still playing today.
And at what age did you start to think, I'm actually A, good at this, maybe better than some of the other kids playing? And did you start to see it as a career in the future, or was it just something you enjoyed doing?
I wasn't dominant in the under-16s or anything like that. So it wasn't probably until I was maybe 17 that I improved quite dramatically from around about 17-year-old. And I was then kind of beating good amateurs, and then, you know, I was kind of holding my own against some of the pros that were falling off the tour. So it was probably around about my late teens and around about that time where I kind of realised that I might be able to do something. But then you go down to the Q school and there's that many players and you don't get through, you kind of think maybe it's not, because you can't judge yourself on how good you are when you're in your own club, and when you're on, you need to be in different conditions that you're uncomfortable with. It's a hard one to put a number on, but I'd probably say about 18, I thought I might have a chance.
Well, that's because that's around the time you won the European amateur title, which was a massive deal for you, obviously.
It was, yeah. But the thing is, I won it in the June of 2012, but in the March, I lost in the semi-finals of the European under-21s. And that was kind of a tournament I thought I might do okay in, because there's a lot of players about my age that were doing well. And I got to the semis and I lost to Shane Castle. I don't know if you remember Shane Castle. And by the way, he was awesome. A 14-year-old, he was absolutely brilliant. And then I went to the Q school just before I won the European. I didn't get through. And as far as I was concerned, I probably thought, it's probably not for me. I'll go to the European Championships, see how I get on. And I think playing against the older guys probably helped my game more. Like, I was getting potted off the table against the young guys and the 21s. So I think it was probably a blessing in disguise that I went through that and then I won the Europeans. Just funny how it works.
Mm. And that got you on the tour, right?
It did, yeah.
So what was that like? Because what you say, you've had the disappointment of Q school and then suddenly... there you are, you're going to turn pro.
I know. Yeah, I know. I remember my first year, it was just obviously, because I think any first pro, they're just trying to get their bearings of what they need to do, first of all, what they need to sort of organise themselves with, because it's not just about playing snooker. You need to organise your life, you need to organise your whatever, booking hotels, and there's so many things that you don't think about. And then obviously the playing aspect of it is hard, because you're playing against top players. And It was hard. I didn't really enjoy my first season, because you're never really sure what it's all about. But the second season, I really enjoyed it a lot more. And I've always been kind of a hard worker. I tinker things technically wise, and I think that kind of helped me. I've always been like that. Really.
I'm interested in that first year. I think it has changed a little bit now, because I think they have sort of inductions. But on day one of your first tournament, What do? You just turn up and you're just sort of, you don't know where you are. Does anyone kind of
I remember it was in Gloucester. It was a PTC because the ranking event format was still the old system. It was only my second year that the new system came in, and which I actually don't mind. But in Gloucester, it was the PTC format. I remember I played Liam Highfield. I think it was Liam Highfield I played. Maybe you can look that up. And I won that match. So that gave me a lot of confidence. But then I played Marco Fu, and he just kind of schooled me completely. Mm-hmm. And you know, he wasn't, in my eyes at the time, a top player, because he wasn't winning a lot of tournaments. But then you see guys like Marco Fu, who's only won, what is it, 3 or 4 ranking events. You see how good they are. And then you see, remember, this is actually harder than I thought it was going to be. But yeah, it's, I don't know. Yeah.
And at that point, I think you said you enjoyed your second year. Did you see this as almost, okay, I've given it a go, it might not work out? Or did you feel yourself improving and maybe getting used to the fact that, okay, the standard is high and I've got to really work hard if I'm going to compete?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both. Like I said earlier, I've always kind of tinkered technically wise, and I found a few things that helped me, and I sort of used them in matches, and it's probably more mentally than technically, really, but I don't know, really. It's a hard one, because, yeah, you're obviously going to enjoy it more when you're winning. That's the natural part of everything. But I think I just maybe got used to the way the game was played. Maybe it was played differently, I'm not sure. But I don't know. It's just tough snooker, because you, no matter how much you practice, it never really seems to equate to results, because, you know, you've got to be in a good mental state, you've got to think of different things. But yeah, definitely the second year was kind of an easier year for me. I don't know why, it just seemed to be like that.
Can you think of any specific kind of results that made you feel, actually, maybe turn the corner, or maybe I can actually compete with these guys?
Not really, Dave. I'm not really one of these ones that kind of, like, if I play a match and someone says, how did you play? I say good, or say not very good. I don't think of specific games or specific shots that I've played. Some guys come off and say, oh, did you see that shot? I honestly can't remember some of the shots that I've played. No. But I can't think of a match. There probably was, but it's gone out of my memory so fast. But I know I had a lot of good results in China in the second year. And that obviously helped in the travel aspect of it, getting used to that. So,
yeah. I can ask about that, actually. Obviously, at the moment, we don't have those events. But what was that like? Suddenly, you're effectively traveling the world. It sounds glamorous, but, I mean, I went on a couple of the early trips. It's not at all, is it? I mean, it's a lot of functional travel, airports, yeah. And going airport to the hotel, jet lagged and all that stuff. Did you suffer on the jet lag, and how did you find sort of traveling in general?
Between you and me, I thought it was, I didn't like China, and I still don't like China. I got food poisoning the first time I was there. So that kind of put a bad act on it already. It's just not what you think it's going to be. You think, we get this sort of propaganda in the UK where it's all these lovely kind of rivers and these buildings with the shapes on them. But it's just not like that. It's just, it's a different culture. I'm not going to say it's bad. It's a different culture, and you need to get used to it. And to go there and play a best of seven, you might lose on the black. To then have that journey home is something you need to experience. I can't really give you a description of it. You need to experience it to know what it feels like.
Yeah, I always feel like when you talk to players about coming back from China, obviously, like you say, you've gone a long way, you might have lost first round. That's when you realise how mentally demanding the profession is, because it is a profession, being a snooker player at the professional level. How are you sort of with dealing with defeats and dealing with the disappointments?
I'm a lot better than I used to be. That's for a variety of reasons. My personal life's good now. But back then, you think when you're growing up, snooker is everything, and when you lose some matches, you just can't think of anything worse. On the plane, even just waiting at the airport for 4 or 5 hours overnight, there's just so many things going, so many shots that you replay over your head, and you think, why did I miss that? Did I miss it on the side that I normally miss it? And it just, aye. 2 seconds. Sorry. Yeah. So, but it's one of those ones. Like I said, you can't think of it's going to be that bad. It's just a game of snooker, but it can really mentally frustrate you. No doubt about it.
Yeah, and like I say, it's not just a game of snooker, because you're playing for your living. There's certain matches you have to win to win any money. I was going to ask you about playing on TV. Do you remember your first sort of TV match?
I know I played. I think I played Selby in China at one of the Asian PTCs, but in the UK, I know I played O'Sullivan. I played O'Sullivan in the PTC finals in Preston, and just the whole atmosphere and the pressure involved of even just walking out with Ronnie and just the way he plays, it was just too much for me, I think. it's a different thing. Yeah.
But after a few years, 4 or 5 years, you started actually, going deep in a few tournaments. You got to the semis in Wales, 2017.
Yeah.
So suddenly you're kind of, because the thing with, I mean, it's changed a little bit because they're qualifying now, but the original home nations, you get there day one, it's an absolute cast of thousands. Obviously, the crowd, the field thins down. You're suddenly there on the Saturday. There's only 4 players left. Did you start to think, well, why shouldn't I win this?
Definitely. I know. Obviously, I'm in the practice room and you've got Willie Thorne talking to the Welshman, and you're thinking, am I actually the one that's playing here? Because I'm always used to watch this on the TV, and Willie Thorne's in the commentary or in the punditry in the studio. And I actually think, no, I'm actually not bad at this game. I'm all right. But then obviously you go out and you play someone of Judd's caliber, and even though I played okay, I lost 6-3. But that, even after that tournament, I thought, maybe I actually can do something. I just keep working on little small things and taking really small steps at a time. And it's only when you kind of reflect on it now that you think that was maybe the kind of event that sort of spurred me on even further. And it was a good time back then. I liked it.
And also, I guess, the fact that you're there in the semi-final live on TV, your family can see it. You're not on table 6 playing anonymously. You're actually, when you tell people you're a professional snooker player, this is your chance to prove it, because they can see it.
Yeah, and they can't turn around and say, I've never heard of him, when you say, I've lost to this guy, even though he made three centuries in a 90. And they say, well, how did you lose to him? At least when you lose to Judd Trump, they go, oh, that's a tough match. And, but it was just good even playing Judd, because I think whenever you play a top player for the first time, you need to let them know that you can play as well. But it's only over a number of years where I think you can really say that. Whereas the first time they play you, they're probably thinking you're not very good. But then after, I think it was 4-3 down in that match. And at that point, I thought I could probably win this tournament because I'm kind of holding my own with him. Yeah, but then I think he made a couple of good breaks to win 6-3. But no, I really enjoyed that tournament. And I do like Wales. There's no doubt about it because I've always done well there.
And you got to a couple of other quarters and semis around the sort of next couple of years. And also 2019, you make your debut at the Crucible. Now, that's sort of the holy grail for snooker players. Before we get on to the actual match with Kyron, when you qualified, how did you feel then? Was that like really exciting?
I don't know what I felt because I was 9-4 up and I got paid back to 9-all. I won the decider. I made a 60 break in the last frame and I don't know how because I couldn't stand up and two, I couldn't even see the balls. I just what this game does to you, I can't honestly say it, but that qualifying match was brutal and just to get through it and then even play the Crucible was awesome. But yeah, the qualifying was tough, really tough.
Mm.
I mean, I've played in the qualifying for now 10 years and I've only got through twice. And every time I've came back, I can't say I've played really bad, you know, and it's just tough.
Mm. But when you get to the Crucible, you know, and you put your stuff on, you're in the dressing room, they call you, you're in that corridor, you're about to be introduced. That must have been exciting.
Brilliant. Really, really, really exciting, yeah. It's probably more nerve-wracking than excitement. But then when you go out there and you start playing, you win your first frame, it is really enjoyable. You know, obviously, I've never won a game at the Crucible, but to play there is something else because you don't realise how small the venue actually is. You know, you're sitting right next to your opponent. I know it looks like that on the television, but it looks even closer when you're there. You know, it's some venue. It really is.
Had you ever been to watch before? Or was that literally never. Your first been there?
No, right. Never. I said I would never go until I've played there. Yeah, but now I might go and watch a couple of matches if I'm down at the time it's on.
And is it? I mean, the tables always look the same, but the arenas are different. Is it harder to play there because it's so tiny? I mean, you're kind of even the wall is like there's only just about room to actually play. Was it? Yeah. Did you find it hard to actually sort of play your own game?
Yeah, from what I remember of it, yeah, I definitely did. And I was playing against Kyron, who had always had a lot of success there whenever he'd played there. And it was just, I think I was 3-1 down. I nicked the frame on the black to go 3-1. And that's probably when a lot of relief came because you just don't want to get granted. You don't want to lose 10-0. And once I went 3-1, I was really, really sort of in the zone. And then you know, even though I lost, I still enjoyed it.
Mm. And then the following year, there's been so many championship leagues recently that it's kind of hard to keep track of them. But you won one of them, invitation version.
Yeah,
it was a bit of a roller coaster, Scott, wasn't it? Let's be honest, in Leicester, because it was you had a sudden, well, I don't know whether it was an allergic reaction or something. You were taken ill during the initial group phase.
Yeah, it was a weird one. I think I was playing Graham in the final of one of the groups, and I was 2-0 up. And I think I just played a safety shot. And I just coughed. And then all of a sudden, I couldn't get any air into my lungs. It was like there was something stuck in the back of my throat, and I don't know what it was. So I just tried to cough again as if, you know, it's something normal, but a bit of phlegm or whatever. And then it sort of made it worse, and I just had to run to the toilet. And Mark Williams, the security guard, came in and goes, "You're all right." He goes, I said, "I can't breathe. I can't breathe." So then I think it was maybe 30 seconds where I kind of coughed in the bathroom sink, and then it seemed to be okay after that, but then I had to go out for some fresh air for a good half an hour because that was weird. I still don't know what happened to this day. Just one of those very strange occurrences.
But you won the title, so it all worked out okay.
Yeah, I won at the end, so that was good. Thankfully, because I got told I was going to be disqualified after the second game. I have to leave the room. Yeah,
but Graham, I think Graham sort of said, well, no, you know, we've got to let him. I think Graham said, I mean, he could have claimed the match, couldn't he? But he said,
Graham's a good guy, one of the best guys on the tour. And no, I'm pretty sure he said no. Because you could see that I'm 2-0 up. If I was 2-0 down, he could maybe have thought I was trying to play games with him. But, you know, it's just one of those weird situations, dude.
I mean, I'm not going to pretend the Championship League is one of the game's absolute majors, but the fact is you won it, and there were a lot of top players in that tournament.
Yeah, listen. I didn't ever think I'd ever win anything at that stage because, you know, I'm not a top player, and to win anything on the Pro Tour is awesome. You know, it does come a lot of bonuses, champions, and obviously with the financial aspect as well. But, you know, just to win something, just to say I've won something, not everyone can actually say that. The vast majority of players who even A, pick up the game, and B, turn pro, they don't win anything because it's just so hard. It's nothing to say they've not tried their best. It's just so hard. The standard's so high, and just to say I've won something is obviously a good thing.
But what you also did there, this was last year, the same tournament, that fluke. We've got to talk about that. People will have seen it. We went viral. I mean,
I know.
Talk us through it, Scott.
Can I? Can you? I don't know. You seen it? I didn't see it at the time. So I've played the red at the black pocket, trying to develop some reds. I've ended up missing the pot because I was looking at the positional aspect of the shot. And now that I've split the reds open, all I can see is what I've left Graham. And then I just heard a pocket rustling as if a ball had went in the pocket. And I'm just standing there thinking, I'm sure that came from the middle pack. And then I just see Rob Spencer just laughing. And well, I'm there, Rob. He goes, it's went up the table on the cushion, bounced along the rail, went over the middle pocket, hit the knuckle and swerved round the blue into the other middle. And I was like, no, I'm not sure about that. And Graham, but the funny thing is with that fluke, when it happened, the first thing that I heard was Graham said, and it counts. That's all he was interested in. You know what Graham's like?
Yeah.
He said, and it counts. Because he's never happy, but it's just funny. Yeah.
I think it proves, though, and this is kind of touching on, again, the mental side of snooker. It's a real, even at one frame can be a roller coaster. Your emotions change so much. We've seen players, obviously, they'll miss, go back to their seat, utterly dejected, expecting to be punished, but then their opponent misses. So suddenly, you've got to get back into the right state to then come and hopefully take your chance. Yeah. It is a real test, isn't it, of your sort of mental fortitude?
It is. It is. But, I don't know if I have the same opinion as everyone else. Just because you're in a good frame of mind doesn't mean you'll play well. Mm. It's often some of the best games I've played is when I've been really, I've not even been wanting to go down to the tournaments, let alone thinking I'm going to have a chance of doing something. So snooker's a funny sport because it's not like any other sport. You know, you could play well and the guy flukes a ball and you don't even get a chance to reply. You're just sitting down but there's no doubt that if you can feel like you've prepared and done everything you can and you're in a good mindset, it will definitely give you the best chance most of the time.
Is most of the preparation literally the practice, or have you looked into doing some players, they talk to psychologists and they do other things, read books or whatever, meditate. Have you ever done any of that, or are you just focused on the actual game?
I'm focused on my game when I'm in the club and sort of working on shots that I don't like and whatnot. But when I'm not sort of like I'm not a drinker, like I don't really go to the pub and that. And I like a lot of like nature stuff and sciencey like stuff. Mm. And I get a lot of good perspectives and thoughts from that stuff. You know, what's important. Like at the end of the day, it is only a game of snooker. And I go out there without really putting any pressure on myself. And I just feel relaxed when I'm playing. So that's kind of what I do in my preparation. Everyone's different. Everyone's got their own. Like Nadal, obviously, you can see how serious he takes it and whatnot. I'm not saying I don't take it seriously. I do take it seriously, but it's just a game of snooker, and you know, it's all going to be forgotten about at some point. So you just need to enjoy it while you're doing it.
And what about your relationship with the other players? Because you know, if I go in the players' room, I see groups of players sitting around talking. Some like to keep themselves because you are rivals ultimately, but you spend so much time together, I guess, that you're naturally going to become friendly. And obviously you've got something in common. You're all snooker players.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm quite a shy person anyway. So, you know, I'll speak to the Scottish lads, no problem. I get on with a few of the guys, but like I said, like, because I'm so far away from everyone else, I'm probably the most northern snooker player in the UK, I think, on the tour at least anyway. And like English guys, I don't really see them very often. So you don't really go and speak to someone that you don't know anyway.
Mm.
So I'm kind of normally myself and I'll speak to a few of the guys, but it's normally just me and the missus. And I actually quite like that. I'm quite I'm quite a kind of shy person. I just kind of do my own thing, really. And that's just what I do. That's just that's just what I enjoy doing, to be honest.
As we speak now, you're, I think, 46 in the world. You're in that sort of middle-ranking position where the players ranked there now are a lot better than they used to be, for sure, you know, and any one of them could break through and climb the rankings. Do you do you set goals in terms of, you know, we're starting the season? Do you aim for anything specifically, or are you just trying to do as well as you can?
Oh, 100% just do as well as you can. I don't think, because of the system, you know, you could win three or four matches in an event, and then you could win two in one event, and it means more. So I don't really think you can have a goal in this stage. And then maybe the top players are different. Maybe they set their goals on the specific tournaments, like the top tournaments or whatnot. But as far as it goes with someone doing the rankings like myself, you just need to go and play and one, enjoy it, and two, just try and make it hard for your opponents. I think that's just all you can do. And all anyone can do is just do their best. I don't care who you are. That's all you can do.
And in terms of sort of where snooker is, are you kind of, I mean, as I say, I know you said you weren't a great fan of China, but those tournaments were lucrative. We haven't got them at the moment. But in terms of when the calendar came out, you know, were you, I mean, the Scottish Open is in Edinburgh, which is good news. But in terms of the overall kind of the way snooker is at the moment, are you, as a professional, are you kind of happy with that?
Oh, of course. I mean, I'm earning a lot of money at snooker. I'm not going to complain. Barry, I think Barry gets a lot of criticism, but I think he's done an amazing job. Honestly, I speak to a lot of the guys and they say the same, and he's given us earning opportunities. You know, I'm 46 in the world, and, you know, I'm doing really well for myself. And that would never have happened before he came in. But I look at the calendar, and I know I've heard a lot of folk complain about it, but there are, I think Ross Nicker is doing their best too. I mean, obviously they want China back, and the players do too. But if they're getting told they can't do it, then I don't see what more they can do. As long as we've got maybe 8 or 9, 10 tournaments, then I think that you can't really complain in this day and age.
Just as we sort of start to wrap up, you've been on the tour now 10 years. What would you say are the best things about being a snooker professional as opposed to doing another job?
I think that flexibility of your time. You're not sort of controlled by an employer as such. But that's also a curse as well, because you've got to have the self-motivation, the sort of will to go to the club even when the results aren't going well. And I think that's when you find out if you're good enough, if you can really go and put the hours in when you're not feeling like you want to really do it. But that's probably the thing I do like about it. You have your flexible time. And like, so I was at the Scottish Open Golf yesterday, and if that was a Thursday afternoon, if I was working for an employer 9 to 5, I wouldn't have been able to do that. So just to pick and choose what you do and what you don't do is probably the biggest sort of positive I can see. Yeah.
And the other side of the coin, what would be the sort of worst thing about being a snooker pro?
I think maybe just the fact that when you come back from a tournament and you lose, people just automatically assume that you've just not practiced and you've not played well, whereas it couldn't be further from the truth. You can put all the work in the world and you lose a match, and you know, someone else doesn't do any practice and they play terrible and they win, and people still probably think that they're practicing more than you or whatever it is. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions about being a snooker player, but nobody really finds out until they've played. I think a lot of the guys that watch maybe O'Sullivan played a young amateur, they go, oh, he's rubbish. But then they go and play him at Q School and they can't even win a couple of frames against him. Yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions about snooker. And I think another thing I would say that's not great is I think the difference between playing snooker and watching snooker is the biggest in any sport. Because obviously any sport you watch, you're always good at it because you always see a good shot. But the difference between playing and watching snooker, the gulf between how hard it is and how easy it looks on TV is just so big. It looks so easy. And like, you play a snooker game on your phone, you can select where you want it in the white, you can select where you want to aim on it, but then you go and play snooker and it's just so off. And, yeah, that's what I was saying.
You've been playing snooker, you know, most of your life, but final question, I'm always interested in whether there is an answer to this. If you hadn't been a snooker player, what do you think you would have gone into?
Well, I'm quite a curious person, so I might have done something with like astrophysics or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if that would be the case, because I've kind of just developed that over the years. So maybe it would have taken a different route, but it would have been something like that, I think.
That's quite like different. That's quite different.
Yeah, yeah. I love all this. I love the astronomy. I do. I really love it. So it really gives me a kind of feet in the ground kind of outlook to life, you know.
Brilliant. Well, who knows? In the future, that might be an avenue to go down, Scott. But
no, I'm not sure.
we could say it's not rocket science, although it actually would be. But anyway,
it would be. Yeah.
Listen, thanks a lot for joining me, and best of luck for the rest of the season.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. Cheers, bud.
Cheers. Sports Social Podcast Network.